Right. Hello again. This is Jerry and his brother Julian from Between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast. We've just had a little bit of a break, haven't we? Me and my brother talk. We just try and make sense of stuff that goes on, and often it's culture wars and just the I don't know, the arguing, the bickering, politics and news and stuff. It's a bit of social commentary, I suppose. And the last few, we've been talking about coronavirus. So I suppose not everything's coronavirus connected in one way or another, isn't it? So, I'm Jerry. This is my brother, Julian. Are you all right?
Yeah, all good, yeah.
And we haven't done one for a few weeks, have we?
No, took a few weeks off. I was getting a bit stressed out. I've got dealing through through some stuff in work. They're making redundancies, so I've kind of been focusing on that a lot, but I'm sure, like a lot of people, it's only a matter of time, unfortunately. It's leading to some worrying times ahead.
Hopefully I think we both had a bit of a dip, haven't we? I did last week, definitely. I think this time last week, I just went off for a wander for the day. I don't know. I suppose there's some monotony of things. I think it was a combination of things. It was a combination of just bored, you know, same day, different homework. That's all it is. The only difference is what subjects are homeschooling, I suppose. Every day is pretty similar. I think, the enormity of it all, the worry, like you said, you know, just starts to kind of, like, I don't think we've ever been in a position where so many people just haven't got a clue where we're going to be in 2 weeks, let alone 6 months. And I think the enormity of that starts to worry when it comes to paying bills and, you know, whether there's a job to go to or whether or not self-employed people are going to have the plug pulled within about a week or two. And if you are, you're expected to go to work, where I doubt very much that there isn't, from all what I can see, there isn't any work out there. And I think it just gets lonely. It's weird because I think everybody's in a different position, aren't they? Whether you've got a family, whether you're on your own, whether you work. I think the other big thing divide is whether or not you're in a job that isn't under threat. You know, like I've got friends who work for the state in one way, shape or another, and their attitudes are very different to people that run their own business. You know, because if your job is at threat, you're going to have a different view on lockdown as to those that aren't. You know, and it's everyone seems to be putting out their opinions or based on how it affects them rather than how it affects everybody and what's best for the country or the world. And you know, that's normal. I get it. But yeah, I went for. You know, it's really weird. I went for I wanted to go to the cemetery. And not necessarily to visit, it was a bit of visiting our mum who died when she was young, but in a way it was just a bit of peace. I've always liked the peace and tranquility of cemeteries, and I just fancied walking around the old graves, you know, like, because there's some really old ones there, aren't they? And then you look at, like, I was looking at ones from 1918, and you're wondering, like, little kids and youngsters, and you wonder whether or not they died in the flu pandemic. And in a weird way, I think it was, we're so lucky, our generation, that we feel that we've got a certain control over death. And I think that we don't really look at it. I mean, we have funny euphemisms like passed away and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden with this, we're kind of faced with something that we can't control, and it freaks us out to the various levels. And I don't know, in a way I got a bit comfortable to go and face it, do you know what I mean, and walk around a cemetery and come to terms with our mortality. It's kind of weird, morbid, isn't it? Not many jokes there. But
well, no, but it's true, isn't it? I mean, that's the whole kind of memento mori thing, isn't it? That movement from back in the day where you know, during the medieval period, where people would have skulls in their houses to remind them of death and their own kind of mortality.
Yeah.
And we're so distant from that, aren't we? Our cultures, the Western culture.
No, exactly.
Culture, we just don't see it ever.
Yeah.
None of it. You don't. It's not like, well, you've got various countries in the world, but they still kind of walk past dead bodies in the street. We don't get anywhere near that, do we?
Yeah. No, exactly. You know, so in a way, it was strange. I also listen. I've got this app on my podcast on my phone called Pocket, and it reads articles, which is a real godsend to me, because whenever I see articles I like the look of, but rarely have time to look at them. So you can listen to it, and it's a bit rubbish. You know, let me rephrase that. It's not as good. It's in early days, so it will improve because it's a bit of a robot voice, so it doesn't stop at commas as well as it should do, and so you do lose a bit, but you get used to it. But I was listening to Andrew Sullivan, who I really like, that New York writer, who's British, and he was talking about, because he's written how it reflects on the AIDS pandemic, because he was there at the heat of it all when it happened in the, was it the 80s or whatever? And
during AIDS?
Yeah, and he was also talking about, he was also wrote his article based on Samuel Pepys's diary when the Black Death was on in London. So it was kind of like a little porthole into 1665, was it?
London, yeah,
and walking around and seeing what was going on, and you know, crosses. It's kind of weird. It's kind of all kind of, you know, yeah. It's strangely comforting in a way. I've always, I don't know. I've got a melancholy side to me where I kind of like to face badness, you know, and it's strange, and I don't know. You know, I was thinking about it the other day. I was thinking, you know, that, you know, do we have a job? You know, you're seeing numbers in the developing world shooting off, stuff that we talked about a little while before, and I don't know if it wasn't happening or whether the news reports weren't talking about it, but they do. Well, I'm listening to the BBC stuff that, you know, it is starting to get quite ugly in certain parts of the world.
Is it?
I think in certain parts, yeah, Sudan, Yemen, South Africa, places like that. South Africa, like 8 weeks have been under lockdown, and a lot of their economy is based on wildlife tourism and safaris and stuff like that. And they're not sure how, you know, their whole sustainability of being able to protect animals and stuff is based on a certain amount of money coming in, and that's not. And so struggling. But on the plus side, I've not had to do any ironing for 8 weeks. And, you know, so look, you know, I don't want to be flippant, you know, just a little bit of a thing. But yeah, no. And then, so 4 weeks we've had a break, haven't we? But things haven't got much saner, have they, since?
No, well, it's, you know what it is for me? I think it's like I'm getting to a stage where I'm just frustrated by the lack of clarity from anyone.
Yeah.
That's what you just, I don't know. It's that kind of, it's not the don't believe experts syndrome, but it's like,
yeah.
It's becoming clearer and clearer that no one knows what the hell they're going on about. I'm not sure I can look up to anyone.
Well, you know what?
That's quite discomforting.
Yeah, well, a few podcasts. See, I've got a bad habit of talking about something and then drifting off into a tributary, and then forget where I was going with something. And I remember a few podcasts back, I did that, and I remember telling you about a podcast I'd listened to with someone who, you know, when they do surveys of people's opinions, what are they called? I can't remember what the actual name of it was. But there's this political podcast that I really like with Matt Ford, and he was talking to this lady, and she was talking about prior to all this happening, I think it was the end of last year, it was the end of last year, I think before the election, she was talking about when the attitudes towards politicians and authority now is even worse than what it was when expenses scandal was, you know, where politicians, you're allowed to have a certain amount of business expenses. And what it was they hadn't been given proper pay rises for years. So it became an unwritten rule that you could kind of up your expenses a little bit just to cover it. And over time, it just got really quite ridiculous on what people were claiming for, and it was pretty ugly what went on. But she was saying that attitudes now are worse than there, because what happened there was it kind of confirmed people's suspicions. A lot of people already believed that everyone in power is a bit corrupt and we're all in it for themselves, so it wasn't a big shock. Whereas I think around the Brexit time and stuff like that, I think people realise that no one really knew what no one really knows what they're doing. Nearly everybody's winging it to a certain extent, and it was the fact that the fact that people could see or felt that there were no grown-ups in charge. And when there's no grown-ups in charge, it kind of does get a bit scary and confusing. And I suppose that relates back to what you're saying, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and look, it's like we keep on going back to it. It's a result of the age of information.
Yeah, of course.
Because you can find out anything you want.
Yeah.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
But it's also like a kind of fog of it.
Yeah.
That even though there's so much of it out there, there's too much of it out there, and it kind of confuses the whole thing. Yeah. That's definitely one thing that I've noticed. I'm getting frustrated by the kind of lack of simple questions, the lack of answers to any of those simple questions.
Yeah.
And the constant kind of back and forwards of basic stuff. I mean, brought up on here before, you know, is it okay to wear a face mask? I can't even work out.
I got told off for wearing one the other day.
You got told off for wearing one?
In the shop, yeah. I've got the right arm. Yeah, sorry, you carry on. I'll tell you about my telling off if you want. What were you saying?
No, but and stuff. I was thinking the other day, it's like, how you've got the I don't know, I don't think I've mentioned this before, but you've got the whole of the world's brightest and best, and all the money behind it, and the Bill Gateses, and the every politician, everyone looking into this. There's no other game in town.
Yeah.
And yet, they haven't even got, and you've got these massive organisations, whether it's the UN or World Health Organisation, the EU, whatever, they haven't even got to the basics. They haven't even worked out where the bloody thing came from. We're 6-7 months into this now. We don't even know where it came from.
Yeah.
We haven't even got the power to make China investigate whether it came from a wet market, whether it came from a lab.
Yeah.
Someone asked me the other day, well, that's not really important. But to me, it's like, if I was really digging down, investigating something, I want to know the basics, and that to me is a fundamental basic.
Yeah.
And yet, with the might of the entire globe behind them, they can't even work that out, which is a real worry.
I mean, I didn't want to talk about China again today, but it really is a bugbear of mine. I mean, I was listening to a podcast the other day. We mentioned on the last podcast about the NBA, the basketball in America, wasn't it? Where the Hong Kong stuff was going on, and one of the heads of the NBA said, I feel with the Hong Kong people. And then the Chinese put pressure on the NBA, and they're not willing to move on unless this man's out, and he's one of the heads, and this is going on now, this is currently. And I was remembering, I read an article, but I did remember that there was something that went on. Remember when the coalition government started with Cameron and Nick Clegg? And met with the Dalai Lama, do you remember? Cameron met Lama. And China went mad, didn't they? And then not long after that, Cameron and Clegg met up with him. Not long after that, Cameron said, I see no reason to ever meet up with him again. And apparently when Britain went to do a trade talk, the Chinese representatives had a statement that they wouldn't move on with the trade talks unless the person stood up and read it out in front of everybody. And then they said, we just wanted to make sure you meant it.
That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Just briefly, when I was growing up and way into my 20s, Tibet was always an issue, wasn't it?
Yeah, massive. Yeah.
Tibet was free kind of Tibet. Palestine.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, yeah.
And yet no one ever talks about it anymore, do they?
Hmm.
Hardly ever gets brought up. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I read an article about Tibet anywhere.
Yeah. So it is worrying, and it looks like China have now made a power play in Hong Kong as well, while we're all distracted about this. And yet you talk about, and this is the other issue, that I'll finish with the women telling me off in the shop, but this links to everything. The one thing that's really, like you said, what you were talking about with you, one thing that's bugging me is that it seems that whatever subject we talk about, people can only see it through a left-right lens. So everything has to get funneled through a left-right prism. Everything. The coronavirus shouldn't be a left-right thing to me. It doesn't make any sense that it's a left-right thing. There are so many contradictions in it. You know, you've got the people that have banged on about austerity and how awful it is that we shut down play centres and youth centres and what the kids going to do. Those people that have blamed stabbings on austerity because people haven't got kids, haven't got anywhere to go, are totally happy for kids never to go back to school into the foreseeable future, because that's not a problem. And it's there's so many other contradictions. But the point of it is that one of my friends on Facebook the other day put up, I don't know if you saw the graph from the NHS that was coronavirus deaths in the UK, and the top, I think it was in red, was the above 80s that died, which was really high, and then the second level were between 60 and 80, which was quite high, and then below 60 was pretty non-existent, and now it's as non-existent as it could be. And all he did was put it out there, because to me, from that graph, it makes sense that if you're going to start to loosen stuff up, which you need to at some point, if you look at the least risky, which is the under 60s and the youngest, that's where you got to loosen it up. And those people work and study, so you could kind of look at ways of loosening up that if you can, slowly. But people went mental. And I've noticed when people post good news, I did it last week, you know, where there was where the new cases in London was non-existent.
New cases in London, yeah.
I did it. People jumped on me. And in the end, I just took it down because I was feeling a bit low last Saturday. And usually I don't. Usually I'm up for the fight, but I just wasn't. And I just thought I was only putting good news out there as a positive, trying to perk people up. And people started going on about Boris murdering this and stuff like that. So what it was that this guy put this graph up, and there are people saying it's a shame that the far left are now siding with the right wing media and the Murdoch press. And it's like, hold on. So what you've done is you put a graph, which is good news, the way that we can move forward, and as a country and maybe as a world, we can all benefit from that, because we'd all benefit from that. But this guy could only put it on a playing field of your kind of you on the far left, you're now siding with the far right, and that's a bad thing, and that's the only way that we could judge this situation. So I thought I'd make a little comment, and then was arguing for 2 days. but what it just doesn't, it just bugs me. I think it's so I think it's intellectually retarded, because you're not having an intellectual debate on how best to move forward.
No, because everyone's just, everyone, it is, and that's exactly what it is, just pure laziness. All you're doing is fitting this crisis into whatever your thought process is. You're just squeezing it into to whatever views you held before, aren't you?
It's an extension to Brexit. It's an extension to everything. I'll do a bit of meditation. Usually, I'm very good at finding really long-winded ways of saying something that could be put a lot more succinct. But I was doing a bit of meditation the other day, and a little idea came into my head. And I thought, I could have my own little meme. And it was like, the biased mind rarely finds the truth.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say it is because I know the anti-Tories, I know the anti-left. And what happens is, something will come in the news, and most people aren't looking at it for information so they can increase their knowledge. Most people are mining it to cherry pick bits that they can use in ammunition with an argument against the other side. And did you listen to Sam Harris did a podcast with Jonathan Haidt that I really like. Did you listen to that one the other week?
I did, yeah.
And yeah, and it's really, I thought up that saying, and then he talked about a Zen monk from 3,000 years ago that said something similar. I think he said, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. So I think what he means by that is the great way is the answer. So the answer is not difficult for those that have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth end up miles apart. If you wish to see the truth, hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. And also what Jonathan Haidt finished with was saying that we need to try and sort out some of our problems. He made the point, he said, we have to go easy on each other. We're so prone to moralism and rapid judgment. It's what sets us up for the polarization spiral that we've been in. Social media has tapped into this and amplified it. It's what led to our election result. He was talking about the Trump, because he made the point earlier that it's harder now to find the truth than it was 20 years ago, because like your original point, there's too much out there. And he also made the point that studies show that people driven by hate of an opponent don't care about the common good. So that's what he was saying, was that our food fight, our tribal food fight has led us to Donald Trump. And he said it's what led to the election result, our quickness and willingness to hate each other, to distrust, to question motives, which is also hindering our ability to address this pandemic and find the truth. And it's true, because we're fighting over everything, whereas we should be trying to get our heads together to find the what's going to get us out of it. And I just don't think we're capable of it as a species. I find it quite distressing and disturbing and depressing, if I'm honest. I thought we might all come together a bit, but I don't know. I just don't think we've got it in us.
No.
I don't know.
Which is a big worry, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is a bit, and I don't know. It's strange. And then you look on the page, you look at it today, you look at Twitter today, and every time I do it nowadays, I think, why did I bother? Now it's a big food fight trying to get Dominic Cummings sacked, who's Boris Johnson's man, because when he had coronavirus, I think his wife had it, and he suspected that he was going to have it, and he felt that he needed to, well, according to them, he needed to get his children somewhere where they could be looked after. So he took them up north, left them in a place so his sister could pick them up and look after them through that side of the family while he recovered. That's his story. There's another, that now everyone's trying to pick holes in it, and there's, you know, the usual. So it'll either be him leaving, or they'll be talking about something else in 3 days' time. But it just bores me senseless.
I know, it's pathetic, isn't it? It really is. It's like, Jesus Christ, focus on the bigger fucking problem. We've got a big problem on our hands. So annoying. It really is. Annoying. It goes back to that, doesn't it? The concern is that there are very few adults left. Bizarre.
No, well, I get up in the morning. I haven't got up after 6:30 in 2 months, which I was thinking about the other day. So I get up 6 o'clock every morning, and a load more podcasts have come. So I have to try and get through them, you know, like, because I've got a bad habit of not clearing clutter out of my life. So the BBC one is the one that I listen to. So it's the world news to let me know what's gone on in the last 12 hours before I last looked. And it's headlines about Trump has admitted to taking chloroquine, whatever it is, you know. And this is the headlines. And it's like, really? This is the headlines? Everything is done. They've not learned the lesson, have they? They said last year that it was the massive amount of publicity that Donald Trump, because the media couldn't just have Trump everywhere. And then everyone realised, hold on, we've given him all this publicity for free, and now he's president. You would have thought that maybe we might, you know, just kind of learn that lesson. But every time, Donald Trump said this, Donald Trump said that. And I'm sick of it. I hope he loses so badly, because it's, you know, one, I think he's an idiot, you know, and I really think I just don't think it's good for the world. My opinion always was, everyone used to slag off America, and I was always a bit of an America file, even though I think it's a bit of a mad place. But I thought they're the world's policemen. If you say stop being the world's policemen, I think the world would be a worse place, even though they're far from perfect. And they've stopped being the world's policemen. They've stopped being the person in charge. And I always said, if they pull out, then there's going to be a vacuum and others will slip into it. And I don't think the others that slip into it are going to be... I think they're going to be a lot worse. And I think you're seeing it now. I think you're seeing a certain amount of chaos.
My worry is that it won't change anything. You're just waiting for someone else. I mean, look, because my opinion about him has kind of always been the same. It's like he's not the reason that this is happening.
Yeah.
Because this is happening all over the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's Boris here or Bolsonaro in Brazil or I don't know, do you look at Italian politics or Russian politics or French politics? Like, it's only 3 years ago, Le Pen got like a third of the vote.
Italy, Hungary, like, Sweden, Denmark.
There's big problems out there. And Trump kind of just part of it. And I think there are a lot of people out there that think, well, once he gets voted out, it'll all go away. But it's here.
No, it's not, because he's a symptom. This is what I said, and I hope it doesn't. Look, I'm worried about what's going on in the world, because I can't remember who said it the other day, but... when the kids are scared, they go run into daddy. Yeah, so, you know, if the public and the population feel threatened, then they're more likely to go to the authoritarians. You know, they're more likely to someone who's going to give them a simple message. But,
I agree with you, by the way. I hope he gets beaten as well. Finally, come around to that. Cause, like, I was a bit kind of whatever on him, and I find the kind of obsession with him really weird, but it's just reached saturation point. It's like, just go away. I don't want to think about the guy anymore. You know, it's just exhausting.
I think we said it from the first. I remember saying this at the same podcast, and some of the stuff, because I always worry, because you put your opinions down and they're there forever, and you it's a bit unfair to be judged, because I have moved on a lot of things since we first started doing it. But I don't think I've moved on this. Trump isn't the sort of person that I would normally have any affinity to. I hate arrogance, and I just think he's you know, remember that Scottish golf course film that he did? He's everything I detest. But the way the media and certain types of public treat him, it kind of weirdly makes me feel quite attracted to him, because he's kind of the people I really dislike. He gets under their skin. But on the other side of the coin, where I have moved, I really think that we need to stop trying to be at each other and antagonistic. We need to try and bring ourselves together rather than push us apart. And he's the total opposite of that. But I've always said that I think both you and I have never been pro Trump. I think we've been anti-Trump, haven't we? Where it's kind of like, it's the madness that goes with it.
I would never have voted for him. I would never have voted for Brexit. But it's the reaction to those things.
Yeah, that make you sympathetic. Yeah, it makes you kind of then go to them. And you would have thought, hold on, we've got to try and do something different. But instead they do the more of it, don't they?
I mean,
the point is what I was thinking the other day. Do you remember the book that I've referenced a few times, The Road to Somewhere? And the whole theory of that is that it's not really left or right anymore. It's more different groups of people fit into different categories. And that's a lot of that is based on their mindset and their personality characteristics. So you've got people that are more open and others are a bit more closed. You've got extroverts, introverts. You've got people that are higher neuroticism, lower neuroticism. I think there are five main ones. I can only ever remember three or four at any one time. Then I forgot which ones I mentioned. So then I ended up getting a bit muddled up unless I got it written down. But you've got people that have an attachment to place. So they live with that, you know, that they respect the authority, they respect their national story, they live with within a certain closeness to where they were born, they believe in openness and migration, but they expect people to integrate and assimilate. And then you've got other people that tend to be more worldly or global in their vision, where they think borders are a bit all old hat and we're all one people, we should open it all up. And what tends to happen is that the first category tend to be on average roughly about... And look, and of course there's an overlap in the two. It's not two separate groups. But the first group is usually two-thirds of a population and the second group is a third of the population. So... But the problem that we're having is that smaller group tend to be the more educated group. So they end up going to university, travelling around, going to different countries for work or education, stuff like that. But now what's happening is that so many areas are being monopolised by that group of people. So the media, so journalism, the courts, acting, the entertainment and the arts and stuff are all that group of people. So it seems that a larger group of people aren't getting a voice. So you've only got that smaller group of people. And whenever someone comes up from the other group to speak up, it's like a machine comes to close them down. So if you don't want populism, this is my opinion, if you don't want populism, you've got to find a way of getting a bigger balance in all those areas. Like education was another one. I think in America it used to be that there were 4-1 left opposed to right in education. Now in certain subjects it's 20-30-40-1. And that what's his name, the guy who works at Brown University, that Glenn Lowry, made the point that he must work with about 5,000 people and not a single one of them is openly on the right. Everyone is either scared that they either keep it to themselves or aren't. And the problem with it is they're the ones educating their ideas or educating or putting their opinions and pumping out these people that are kind of now running the Facebooks and the Twitters and stuff like that. Whereas the larger majority of people aren't given a voice anymore and a shat on if those who are brave enough to say, look, I don't quite agree with this, I think we're better off on our own or doing this, that and the other. And my view on it is, if you're not going to get, if those people aren't going to be represented in the media or wherever, or in education, then people that then populism is going to rise its head, and it's kind of inevitable. If you don't want populism, trying to get a bit more balance of voices. But
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know where it's going. But sometimes I feel fascinated by it, and other times I just feel really depressed by it. I just think it's just like kids fighting.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't seem to change, does it? But that's the thing as well with this virus. It's like it's a real roller coaster, isn't it? I mentioned in the past podcast, because like one day I'll be really up, and you'll read the figures, and the figures go down. And you might listen to someone who says, you know, it looks like it's going to peter out. That's what a lot of these diseases do, and sometimes they just go away, you know. Sometimes like MERS and SARS, we're still living with them, but they're not an issue, you know. And then you see the stock market, and the stock market's boomed a bit, and it all kind of comes at once. And then the next day, it will be like, oh no, that's dropped, and then this company's going into administration, and the unemployment figures from America are this high, and it's all stems from there not being any easy answers. And I get it. Don't get me wrong. It's like it's a new disease. We don't control nearly as much as we think we do. Another thing that Debbie was talking, I don't know if I mentioned this on the earlier podcast, but Debbie was talking to one of her cousins in Paris, who's a quite prominent doctor, and he's been kind of frontline in fighting COVID, and he was really depressed. I was talking to him a few weeks ago, and he was really depressed, and he was saying, look, the problem is I've spent my whole life, well, I think it's been his 50s, he spent his whole life studying and thinking he knows what he's doing, thinking he's got control of medicine. And he said it's really depressed him, because anyone who comes in and goes on ventilators, we can't do anything. I'm totally useless.
Yeah.
And it's the first time in his life that he's felt totally useless in a field that he thought he kind of mastered.
Yeah.
And now this new thing comes along and it's just, boom, there you go, have some of this. You don't know what to do. And he says people come in, They're either going to die or they're not going to die. It's nothing to do. We have no control over any of it. We can make them a bit more comfortable, but that's all we can do.
Yeah.
And it is. It's that, I suppose, we're feeling, well, all of us, I'm sure, have got a version of that going on in our own lives, you know.
You mentioned that for a 3-week-old conversation. Is there a happy bit? Is there a happy bit coming from a recent conversation, or is that it? It's strange, isn't it? You know what I was thinking as well? Yeah, but what do you do? And also the ventilator thing. That was another one, wasn't it? We needed ventilators. We needed people to make ventilators. And all of a sudden now, ventilators, we don't need ventilators. And nearly and a large proportion of people that went on ventilators died. So like 80%, wasn't it? And they think now that what it was because your body, because with a ventilator, you're paralysed, aren't you? So the ventilator keeps you alive. But the body then thinks, well, if the body's given up, then people are taking a downturn. So where they thought that ventilators helped, then through experience, it seemed like ventilators didn't help. So a lot of it is, they're working it out as they go along, aren't they?
Don't get me wrong, it's very impressive. Yeah. And you do get these kind of nuggets of hope every day. I mean, there was an article yesterday about the on the BBC about the T-cells. I think some British, I think it was Guy's Hospital and one of the other big hospitals were looking into T-cells.
Yeah.
So supposedly what it does, a huge percentage of people that are in a bad way, have got a very low T cell count, kind of a fraction of what you should have normally, and it looks like the virus is attacking these cells.
Mm.
Their job is to fight infections, and the virus is attacking these cells, and hence the disease is worse in them. So they're working on medication that already exists.
Yeah.
They're testing it to increase T cell levels.
Yeah.
And then the various medications that are coming out from all over the place. It's great. It's impressive to see it.
Yeah.
Supposedly, like a couple of hundred vaccines being worked on throughout the world. It is impressive to see everyone coming together. It's definitely
amazing. I was hearing that side of it is amazing. And look, and I know
I'm
critical of China, but I'm also aware that we need to be working together at this point. I just don't think afterwards you can go back to how it was.
And they say that is one of the great things. It's like, and that's what the internet has brought out. It's just this ability for scientists from all over the world to put their information, their papers, get on Zoom meetings. It's quite impressive.
Yeah.
And no doubt the ability to do that will speed up the response to it.
Well, they were talking about a way that they can disinfect, that they can use this stuff in like lift handles in hotels or offices, for example. So it like a disinfectant they can put on a lift handle, but it only it comes into action when it feels heat. So if you put your hand on it, it feels the heat, it releases disinfectant so that no bugs, but then when you take your hand off, then it goes off, which means that it can last for a long time. There's so much stuff that you think, bloody hell, it's so amazing.
And then there's good news about that as well. I mean, they're saying that they reckon now that hardly any infections are passed on through touch. It's literally, you've got to have an infected person sneeze on your package and knock on the door and give it to you. It's not like there's a lot of news coming out that this stuff doesn't last on surfaces for hours.
Yeah.
It's pretty much as soon as it's transferred onto a surface, it starts decomposing. Yeah. And it's very unlikely you can pick it up from stuff.
Well, there was
it's possibly not this thing that's kind of everywhere and you can pick it up from anywhere.
Yeah. No, I think it's a healthy warning. There was that thing in China, wasn't there, a couple of weeks ago where there was a spike, and out of 1,250 roughly people that they looked, only one of people that caught it, only one of them caught it outside. So what's that? One in 1,200. So that's less than 0.1%, isn't it? Unless I'm being a bit of a dummy. So that's why I think they've loosened it up outside. Everyone's going a bit mad, but they're going a bit mad without the information. I think now they're also talking about 1 meter rather than 2 meters, because I think they're now starting to work out where you're likely to get it from. I think 80% of people that caught it was from within a household, but then someone's bringing it into the household, aren't they? But I think you need to have sustained amount of time with someone before you can catch it. So, and the other thing was, you know, all those states in America, the southern states in America, because in America it's got so political, isn't it? But yeah. They were talking about all them southern states in America that either didn't close down or opened up a lot earlier. And all the commentary was, oh, the spike that's going to come, these idiots are going to... And you could see The Guardian almost willing it on. I know people on Facebook, they're almost willing it on. Trump voters will get it. Look, there's one that got it that went to that meeting. Look, what an idiot and stuff. But I think see, that's the other thing with America, isn't it? Where they... New York has got battered, hasn't it? But I've got a friend in LA who was saying that they were expecting it. We're 2 weeks behind New York, like we were 2 weeks behind Italy. We were 2 weeks behind Italy.
Where is he based?
He's in California. But he was saying, yeah, we're 2 weeks behind Italy. You know, like we got the stories, we were 2 weeks behind Italy and we were 2 weeks behind Italy. Whereas California hasn't been 2 weeks behind New York. And you look at a lot of those states that opened up, Florida and stuff like that, and they haven't had the spike that everybody anticipated. Yeah. So there are no easy answers. I was listening to a podcast, a Quillette podcast the other day about Oxford University are trying to get all the information on everything that you could possibly look at about the different strategies of different countries. And they're saying there's no patterns. We can see no patterns. The authoritarian people that closed down haven't all done better than the people that didn't close down in the first place. Some people that closed down solidly got out really quickly, but others didn't, and other people that didn't close down much at all really suffered, and others that didn't really close down didn't suffer. So there is no real,
and that just the confusion of it all, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I think for me, I think the definitely one of the things that comes out of it is, like, when you look at figures throughout Europe and America, and I know in New York, it's like there's horrific numbers in care homes.
Yeah.
Number one thing would be to lock down a care home, as in lock it down properly, not just close the door. You know what I mean? You've got to test everyone that goes in, whether it's like pay the staff to stay in there for a couple of weeks at a time and actually live in. But you really need to focus on that. And I think apparently that's what they've done really well in Florida, even though most of the media want to slag the guy off. They didn't.
Because he's a Republican in Florida, isn't he?
Because I think what a lot of countries did, I know we did it, I know New York did it, was clear the beds. They needed beds, didn't they? They needed hospital beds to clear the people, kill the old people.
Well, what happened in Italy and Spain terrified everyone, didn't it? That set the panic. Yeah. So when people were dying, picking who would get treated.
So they needed bed space, and they cleared the old people and put them back in the care homes, but they weren't getting tested properly, so they were bringing the stuff back into the care homes.
Yeah.
And that's apparently what Florida done, which was a right boom, that they didn't let the hospitals put anyone back in the care home.
Yeah.
And you've got to kind of, regardless of left or right, you have to work out what's best practice. And that's definitely seems like good practice. Yeah, to me, it's that. It's the care home issue. And it's the, maybe a bit controversial, but you've got to lock up the 70-year-old, you know?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's like you said, it's like that on that graph, it's a massive percentage of people in their 70s and 80s. The people that get it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or the people that die from it anyway.
Yeah, no, well, there was the study done a while back that people that graduate in times of recessions never ever do anywhere near as well that people that graduate in times that countries are flourishing or economies are flourishing. So, you know, you could graduate really well, but if the jobs aren't there, then to go into, you end up lowering yourself in the market that you go into. And often people rarely catch up. And people that that graduate in times of recession often earn tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds less in a lifetime. So this isn't something that you can just do today. I mean, look at, you know, you're talking about the care homes. But like I always said, that sometimes in life, you know, what we try and do, we try and solve problems. But whenever you try and solve a problem, nearly always you create another problem. But what you've got to do is that hope that the problem that you create solves more, it is smaller than the problem that you solve. So the old idea with the care homes was that they were, as far as I can see, they were terrified in hospitals becoming inundated. So we wanted to make us, they had to clear 300,000 beds. That was what it was. That was the target that was set. wasn't Boris Johnson making that target. There's a whole army of people that come and work out how best to do it, and that's what they came up with. Now, it seems to me that that was pretty shit, you know. Yeah, but that's easy in retrospect. That's my point. I'm not trying to, you know, there are some big mistakes been made. A lot of people want to just lay it at one person's door. I just don't, you know. Yeah, of course, that person's in charge.
No, I get it. Because look, those mistakes have been made all over the world.
But they've been made. But them same mistakes have been made everywhere.
Yeah.
So
because we're learning as we go. It's obvious, isn't it?
No. It's just, we've got a cousin in a care home, haven't we? And she goes, she has dialysis 3 times a week. So she has to leave her care home, travel, 8 miles or whatever it is in London, which is quite a long way, on a bus that picks up loads of people that takes them to dialysis. So she meets a bus driver, other people on the bus, and then goes into a hospital and then has a treatment.
Yeah,
and bus comes back
three
days a week. 3 days a week. And there was an article that I read a couple of days ago that was saying that they think, because they were talking about how it spreads in somewhere like here compared to Sweden. I think they were saying that Sweden has one main international airport hub, whereas Britain has loads. So what will happen is, I suppose it's like trying to light a barbecue. So it's trying to light a barbecue with one fire lighter or trying to light a barbecue with 6 fire lighters. So what happens is, if it comes in loads of different areas... And also the big difference between us and Sweden, which just goes to show how difficult it is to compare. I think they have 60 people per square kilometre, where we have 700 in Britain, 700 people per square kilometre.
Well,
and they were saying that they think that it mainly spread in the UK in hospitals, care homes, and doctor surgery. So when people are going sick, going into places, coughing, spluttering, touching stuff, and that's where it kind of all. Kind of thing, but we're only getting to know it now. And I mean, you know, I was thinking that I don't turn on the radio at any point during the day anymore. I think I listened to a podcast with Douglas Murray, who a lot of people who know him, I think he's a right wing hate figure. I think he's just a basic conservative, but he made the point that rarely. And in any mainstream media now, is anyone looking for any answers? It's just theatre. It's just panto. Yeah. It's just theatre. It's one side arguing the other side. But we are, most of the information that we get is through the alternative media. Now, again, that was set warning lights. Alternative media. But there's good and there's bad in everything, isn't there? Because I remember when I first woke up to it was the two Sam Harris's you sent me and a Joe Rogan. The all within the same week that talked about the magnitude of what was coming, and they were the two things that really woke me up to it. And I was listening to a Joe Rogan 2 weeks ago, and he had a doctor on there, and she brought up the vitamin D thing. And it's only, you know, as far as from what I listen to, they're weeks ahead of what we're getting on the BBC. Yeah. But she made the point, because you know,
absolutely, and obesity. I mean, the chap on Rogan. Because I'd listened to something about a week before that put a shit to me, and then the Rogan podcast came out. But that doctor was talking about obesity in America, and he was saying that this was like 3 months ago. And hey presto, New York's got 30,000 deaths, and a vast majority of them are obese people. And I'm sure if you go. You look at numbers in America, that's the reason. And that was one of the first things he said. They were talking about the cases in Italy, and they're mainly elderly people, and why men are more affected in China, and it could be because they smoke more and they've got affected lungs. And he said, but it's coming to America, and my worry is that our big issue in America is obesity.
And
it's proved to be the case. And yet,
we're the worst in Europe, but... So, but there's loads of red, wasn't there? Because then there was the issue of BAME, black and ethnic minority people and things, wasn't there? And to me, it kind of seemed obvious. It was more a thing that was that affects cities because of high density. Also, it's inevitably going to hit the poorest. Poorest live. Initially, it was Muslim families, wasn't it? And then it was with a similar reason to Italy, where you got intergenerational people that live together. You look at you look at. You remember the story about doing the rounds about 5 years ago, when in Southall, but loads of other parts of London, where they were making garden sheds into housing where five, six people could sleep and stuff like that, because it's cheap and overcrowded. Yeah. I think that someone was telling me the other day they had to drop someone that did work for them, like as a cleaner or a carer or whatever, to a house, and they live, you know, they're almost hotbedding, you know, these foreign people that come here to work, to look after people's kids, and it's sort of like they're almost hotbedding, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 people to a house. But also, and then also you got the front line essential jobs mainly done by migrant people. So where it, so certain groups of people, I saw a question to Boris Johnson by a campaigner who basically was trying to say, when people try and find a reason, anything other than racism, isn't that a form of racism? Because you're trying to victim blame. And it's not, you're trying to look at the science. So, but they also, because there is a big disproportionate amount of people of colour that are dying from it. The New York Times wrote an article, didn't they, over the last couple of days, basically saying that that non-white people get substandard healthcare in the British NHS, and I sent that to you. How can you hold these two thoughts? One minute we're being told that the NHS is full of saintly non-white people, and if it wasn't for that, it would collapse. And then in the next argument, you're arguing that black people don't get substandard healthcare. How can you hold those two at the same time? You know, again, this is an example of, we're not trying to find the truth. We're not trying to get to the bottom of things. We're just trying to score points or use this tragedy to try and further our political thing that we had in the first place. But the Joe wrote,
but then that goes back to what you said. I don't know if you mentioned it on here, but all the other day to me about it, is the whole thing's really interesting because it's a puzzle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like you would have thought, kind of in a way, being a scientist at a time like this, it's kind of fascinating because you're trying to work out how to beat this thing. It's your own little war, you know. And it is trying to do a massive jigsaw puzzle. And it's the hot air from the kind of media or the Twitter world or whatever. They just don't add anything. The Piers Morgans, the James O'Briens, it's just boring, you know what I mean? It just doesn't add anything. Just shouting at people and trying to lay blame on people. It's bizarre.
I find it fascinating to look at it from above without a bias either way. I find it fascinating. I said to you before, it's just trying to work it all out. I mean, what they said was, because the other thing was certain diets, because South Asian community have higher blood pressure and diabetes and stuff due to diet. So there's loads of reasons. But even though what they said was a couple of weeks ago, that even if you take all those reasons, there's still a big, the smaller, but still a significant discrepancy. And then I was listening to Joe Rogan a couple of weeks ago, and then the I can't remember the name of her, but she brought up vitamin D deficiency. That in, I think it was in Indonesia, that nearly 100, I think something like 90, really high nine, and the really high 90% of people that died from it were deficient in vitamin D. And those that weren't deficient in vitamin D was only made up 4% or something. So again, correlation isn't causation. And, you know, so basically just because it's similar doesn't mean that is the reason. So scientists use this thing called correlation causation. When I'm trying to explain it to my son about correlation causation, we were talking about it today because it was talking about cannabis and whether or not cannabis creates mental health, or people with mental health problems go to cannabis and it makes it worse. So I was trying to explain to him correlation causation. So I said, look, you know when you go past the fried chicken shop? And he said, yeah. And I said, you look at most of the boys in there, their trousers are halfway down their bum. So do we conclude from that fried chicken makes your trousers fall down? Your trousers fall down. So that is my explanation of why correlation doesn't always mean causation, right? So correlation, causation. But what they were saying on it is that skin pigmentation is designed to either protect or absorb from sun. So if you biologically, if you live in a hot climate, our bodies only need to absorb a certain amount of sunlight. And if you live in a hot climate, we've evolved to have darker skin because it reflects the sunlight, because you don't need too much, it's protecting. However, in places where there is less sunlight, the pigmentation is much lighter because it needs to absorb in the very short period of time that your skin is open to sun. So there is an argument that people with dark skin who come to countries that have less sunlight do suffer more from vitamin D deficiencies. And they were talking about Sweden, and also not only black people that have been here through generations and were born, but also newcomers from places like Somalia and Muslim countries, and females who cover up. So even though there is a smaller amount of sunlight, then there is more issues with vitamin D deficiency for people that don't put their skin out to the sun. So these are possible reasons. I'm not saying that they are reasons, but again, I'm listening to this on the podcast we're listening to weeks ago, yet the implication is on the BBC that it's really about racism. And this is where we are. We can't have, look. And I don't know, maybe it is racism. I'm not trying to dismiss it, but I just don't want every opportunity to try and find an axe to grind. I just find it so tiresome.
Well, no, exactly. And it just goes back to what we were saying earlier, because it's easy for that. It's just kind of a lot of it's intellectually dishonest, isn't it? It's just easier to squeeze this crisis into the mindset you had before it.
Of course.
So if you ran through your life thinking racism was the cause of everything, suddenly you've got a pandemic on your hands and you see some discrepancy, well, it must be because narrow, isn't it?
Well, that
but it's just really... It's poor thinking, isn't it?
Well, I remember Jonathan Haidt again. He makes the point that if he had a problem and he went into a university and presented this problem. So if he presented the problem to an economics class, the economics class would come with an economics related solution. Yeah. So then if he took that same problem to a social justice type class, they would look at it from a social justice type angle. And then if you took that same problem to a biology class, they would come with a biological problem. Now, even though every one of those people, are they experts in their field? They may well be. But have they found a solution to the problem? And the answer is no, because it's never through that one individual lens. What you need is everybody across the board to try and work out what proportion of that is right and what proportion of that. And it's difficult. And the problem with it is that none of us know. I don't know. But one thing that I've developed over the last few years, you're the same, is we're not saying we know any answers. We're just trying to make sense of all the information. But I was thinking the other day that if you've got a line of a political spectrum, which is left, far left on one side, far right on the other side, the further you are along the line, the more certain you are about things. You know, the more stupid you are. In my opinion, if you can only see through your... In the most confusing time now, when no one's got any answers, even the experts, you think you have. It says more about you than anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, so shall I tell you the story about me being told off for the fact...
Oh,
I haven't built it up too much. It's not that good.
Been waiting an hour for this.
Well, no, because I just have a scarf, because I don't have a face mask, because I'm on the bike half the time, and then it makes my glasses steam up and stuff. I know I've got to get used to it at some point. But I wear so I've got this scarf that I kind of wrap around my face if I go in a shop. So it's round my neck if I'm on the bike, and I wrap it around my face if I'm in the shop. So I was in the supermarket, and you know you're in an aisle. It's not a big supermarket. There's an aisle with a bollard in the middle, right? And so there's this woman looking at the shelf right by the bollard, blocking the block. So I just wait there politely, not getting too close, but kind of thinking she's bound. Everyone's got a level of self-awareness to know that there's someone near, especially in these paranoid times, right? So I'm there thinking, give it a few couple of seconds, and then she doesn't. I've got the scarf wrapped around my mouth, so I'm looking like a Bedouin, kind of, from the neck up. And I said, sorry, love, do you mind if I could just get past? And so she moved out of the way, feigned, like, surprise. And as I walked, I said, that doesn't do you any good. And I said, what? She said, what, you think that scarf does you any good? That scarf doesn't do you any good. I said, right, okay. I said, so you're an expert now, are you? She said, I had it.
Yeah.
I had it. You need a face mask. Gave me the code, a free face mask. Otherwise, there's no point doing it. None whatsoever. I walked off, and then I got cross, and I thought, right, no, I'm going back. I'm glad I didn't find her, because I would have looked like a nutter, but no. You know, walking fast behind a woman who's walking away, hounding her. I would have looked bad. But what I wanted to say was, look, I know that me putting a scarf over my face doesn't protect me, right? However, if I'm walking close to people, just out of politeness, I want to put something over my face so I don't breathe on them. That's all. I know that it doesn't protect me, but it protects others more. And not totally. Of course it doesn't totally. But even if it protects them by about 5 or 10% more, then that's worth me doing it, because it's just showing that I've got manners and I think of other people. And really, I think the only reason why she said it is because she didn't like me pointing out that she was blocking the way. That's what that's my theory. But anyway, I didn't find her. I was going to have a rant on the local Facebook page. No, I didn't. But then I was thinking, imagine if I looked on the local Facebook page and then this mad woman started to say what this horrible man did to her in the shop, when all I did was ask her. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, have you got anything else that you might want to add?
No, it's all good.
Yeah. We ended up laughing, didn't we? Started off nearly in tears. Started off nearly in tears. Anyway, all right, we'll see what happens. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. Were you about tomorrow?
Yeah.
Because we've been getting together once a week to social distance over my front garden wall, haven't we? You like to take the kids for a drive. So
one of the highlights of the lock-in, yeah.
My dad said that you made the comment to him that we see each other more than we did before coronavirus.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like once a week.
Once a week. You know he's mad, our dad, right? We never did say anything without mentioning our dad, right? I don't know if I told you this, but the day of VE Day? VE Day. This answers where we probably get it from. But the day of VE Day, right? I rung him up, must have been about 9 o'clock at night. I'd had a couple of drinks as well that day. And it's one of those that it's a big day that I'm not conscious is a big day. And then I only realise it's a big day when I look at Facebook at the end of the day and realise everyone's had a really good time. And we didn't do anything. It's indoors all day. But Dad was at 9 o'clock at night, he was watching the Politics Channel, right? And he'd been watching the Politics Channel since 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because they were rerunning the live footage of the day of the 2010 general election, where Cameron and Clegg set the thing. And you know, the day of an election, not a lot goes on, does it? Because it's the day after where you get the results. The day of the election is quite boring. So he'd done 7 hours solid of watching the 2010. It's like watching a 10-year-old football match, isn't it? That you know the result.
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it?
7 hours. And the worst thing is, you know what? I don't think he's sussed the pause button, because whenever I ring him up and he's watching something or listening to something, he always says,
"Got to rush to get back to it.
I've got to go now. Just get to the good bit." 37 seconds a call last week I rung him, 37 seconds, because he was watching Majid on YouTube. I've got to go. I've got to go. Majid's on. So anyway, all right, mate. Well, we'll see when we do another one. We don't have to do them weekly. Whenever, yeah.
Yeah, something comes up. There's, okay. There's always something, isn't there?
All right, then. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
See you, Jules. Bye.
Bye-bye.